Hey guys, welcome back to the Design for More podcast. My name's Pastor Chad Harold, and I am thrilled you're joining us today. Now, as we continue this study on brain science in the Bible, we are looking particularly at the different ways that God has wired us and designed us so that we can best be used by Him to build His kingdom. It's all about figuring out and understanding that you and I were designed for far more than we think we are. So I hope you'll get excited. I hope you'll enjoy this message. I hope it's practical. I hope it's helpful. And I hope you'll continue to share what's happening here with those around you in hopes that it might too help them. So let's get ready for another exciting message. Here we go. All right, so let's begin. Let me read to you a verse. Proverbs 4, chapter 20 says this. Dear friend, listen well to my words. Tune your ears to my voice. Keep my message in plain view at all times. Concentrate. Learn it by heart. Those who discover these words live. Really live, body and soul. They are bursting with help. Keep vigilant. Watch over your heart. That's where life starts. Now, this verse, by the way, I read from a message type translation. So it's a little loose if you're looking at an ESV, which is what I typically teach from. But I liked how, and this is how they use it in the book, I liked this translation and how they worded it. So let's talk about this for just a minute. First of all, notice who wrote this, okay? So this is Solomon, King Solomon, writing predominantly to his children, his older children now. Best guess is they're somewhere in their 20s or 30s, and he's writing to them, and he's begging them to just keep wisdom in front of them as they navigate life. Now, if you're familiar with Solomon, just in case not, I want to just explain this to you because I always think this is really important. In fact, I'll tell you a fun story. Years ago, there was a lady that I was doing ministry alongside. She was a little bit older than me and significantly wiser. And one day we were talking and I said, she said, hey, I want to just encourage you. I said, great, lay it on me. I want to hear what you got. And she said, well, I'll get back to you. I need to go pray and think about what the Lord would have me say. But I'd like to go do that. And I said, okay, cool. I kind of thought you had a word for me right there. I was ready to take it, receive it, walk out here and go do this. She came back 3 days later. There was no symbolism in the 3 days. Just happened to be 3 days. She came back 3 days later and she goes, I got it. I got a word for you. She goes, I want you to go read 1 Kings chapter 4. And I was like, that's it? That's the word? Go read the Bible. I could have done that on my own. I didn't say these things out loud, of course. I'm just thinking them in my head. So I go home and I read 1 Kings chapter 4. And it is the story of how Solomon gained his wisdom. It's actually really fascinating. So Solomon is a king. He's got significant leadership ability and significant responsibility that weighs upon him. And in essence, in this story, just to give you the nutshell, God appears to him and says, I'll give you anything that you want. It's kind of crazy. Genie in the bottle type moment, right? I don't mean to be sacrilegious, but just to get a perspective. God says, I'm going to give you whatever you want. Ask and you shall receive. And you know what Solomon asked for? He says, God, give me wisdom. And God grants him wisdom and every other thing that could become, including money, fame, and all that would follow. Now, we know Solomon's end story gets a little dark, but in that moment, right after God gave him wisdom, there was an opportunity for him to show it. And I love to tell stories. I think it's so fascinating. So here is Solomon. He's the king, and we have these two ladies that come before him because at the time, a king would help to settle civil disputes. And so these two ladies are living together. You can find all this in 1 Kings chapter 4, probably in much more detail, but I'm giving you the nutshell. So these two ladies approach him, and they say, we need you to solve our conflict. Here's the conflict. We both are moms. We both live in the same home. One of us rolled over on our child and accidentally suffocated our child in the middle of the night, and our child died. This is in the Bible. I'm telling you the truth. And so they come because what happens is in the middle of the night, the lady that accidentally suffocated her child went to the other lady while she was sleeping, took her baby, and brought it into her bed as her own child. So when the lady woke up and realized that the babies had been switched, she looked at the child and she knew, mother's instinct, this isn't my kid. And she couldn't prove it, right? Because there was no evidence. It was just, this isn't my kid. So there was this civil dispute. So they go before King Solomon. So they said, King, what would you have us do? So guess what King Solomon does? This is epic. This is epic. He grabs a sword and he says, bring the baby that's alive to me. says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this sword. I'm going to cut this. Some of you are like, what is wrong with the Bible? This is crazy. I'm going to cut this child in half and give half to each of you so that you can both be satisfied. I don't remember if he gets as far as to raise the sword, but in this moment, guess what happens? The mom whose child it really was, she jumps out in front and she says, no, it's okay. Let her keep the child. I'd rather the child live than both of us get a piece of it. And Solomon goes, give the baby to that lady because it's definitely her kid. Moments of wisdom that God gave. Really crazy, right? How cool is that? So that's the story of Solomon. That's how he gained this wisdom and became what the Bible would describe as one of the wisest men to ever walk the earth. Now, here is Solomon saying to his children, remember, he's speaking to his adult children. He's trying to encourage them and challenge them and motivate them. And what does he say? Notice throughout this whole verse, he's talking about concentration. He's saying, I want you to focus on my words with your heart, with your ears. I want you to tune in. Why? Because here's the thing. You and I can give wisdom to people, including our kids, but we can't make them receive it. And we can't receive it for them. They have to make the choice. Another way to look at wisdom, I really like this. Wisdom is taking knowledge and putting it into action. Right? I can tell you what to do or how to do it. Or one of you may give me a lesson afterwards, like how to play pickleball. But until I put it into action, I haven't used that wisdom. I just know it. There's a lot of people in the world that know a lot of stuff, but they don't live it out. And so they're not wise. They just have a lot of knowledge. There are a lot of Christians on a side note that have a lot of Bible wisdom, but they don't live it out in their lives. There's a breakdown there, right? That's confusing. So Solomon is begging his children, please listen, please hear. So almost use your, he what says, take your whole body, your whole mind, your whole heart, all of your ears, and listen to my words. What's he saying? Put out all other distractions and focus on this one thing. What is the one thing? The one thing is to focus on God. Why is that important when it comes to multitasking? Because God is modeled in the Bible what? There is no one else but me. God's designed you and I to be focused on Him and on Him alone. Seek first the kingdom of God and trust that all other things will be brought before you. And so what we're seeing here is the first, if you will, small indication that, hey, maybe this idea of us trying to do all of, follow all this and be all that is not how God intended it. In fact, maybe God intended you and I to simply just focus and follow Him and trust Him to take care of everything else. Which leads us into the basis of what we'll talk about tonight. That's this, that multitasking is a myth that is plaguing the modern generation. Multitasking is a myth that is plaguing our generation, you and I, right now, alive on this earth. Now, we're going to unpack a lot of different things in this topic, but this is what I want you to kind of settle in. Now, first question you're going to have is, okay, what is multitasking? So let me give you an official definition. Multitasking is performing two or more tasks simultaneously. It could be switching back and forth from one thing to another or performing a number of tasks in rapid succession. I think the first part and the second part are the most accurate. It's either doing two things at one time or more than that, or it's doing things in rapid fire succession. You're just boom, 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 boom. Now look at this. What happens when you and I multitask? It leads to two things. This is what scientists say. It leads to two things. Obsessive time management and what they describe as hurry sickness. Hurry sickness. We are always in a hurry to get something done. We're always in a hurry to get somewhere. We're always in a hurry to accomplish something. When multitasking overwhelms our life, it creates in us an obsessive time management and what they call hurry sickness. So let's unpack it slowly, okay? Routine multitasking might look like this. You're watching TV while you're folding laundry, right? How many of you love folding laundry? Let's just get some honesty in the room. Great. My house is open every Sunday from 12 to 3 for laundry folding sessions, all right? Watching TV in the background, folding that laundry. How do you fold your laundry? Do you do something, listen to music, you talk to somebody, watch TV? What do you do?
TV, on the phone, yeah.
Oh, great. So this is for you tonight. Yeah, so no one else really needs to be here. It's for you. Okay, great. Glad we can nail that down. And you would argue, you got it.
I got it.
You can do it.
I can do it.
You can watch.
I have trouble just sitting watching TV. I have to be doing something else.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm sick.
So Sarah, you need to listen real carefully. Okay.
All right.
We're recording this because this is going to be good. Okay. So that's routine multitasking. Okay. Now let's talk about some deadly multitasking. How about tonight you're going to hop in your car. You're going to drive home, especially if you came alone. You're going to drive home alone. What are you going to do most likely? Going to listen to music, right? Maybe got to make a phone call. So maybe you're making a phone call while you're driving. Maybe worse. Maybe you're texting, right? Oh, it's just one word, just one letter. Yes, 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 yes. But the stupid autocorrect made it longer and I got to fix it. And we're texting while we're driving. This is called deadly multitasking. Here's the thing. Because we are capable of being semi-good at multitasking and routine things, we allow ourselves to carry it over into things that are actually extremely deadly. If you and I actually stop for just a moment to think about how deadly it is to drive a vehicle, and this is a problem for all of us because we're all old enough to have been driving long enough that we are so comfortable, most of us drive home and we don't even know how we got there. If you and I stop for just a moment to think about how deadly it is to operate a motor vehicle on I-10, you and I would never do another thing except two hands at, I wish I remembered because that would look good right now, 10 and 2, with your eyes locked in the windshield and your seatbelt fastened, nothing else on, with full attention, because you know at any moment you could kill someone or kill yourself or both. Operating motor, but we don't think about it. Why? Because we've become comfortable. I do this all the time. Are you kidding me? I can text, I can call, I can listen, I can switch the light, switch the radio, and drive, no problem. I can even take a shortcut and my body will still know how to get me home. See, what happens in routine multitasking is we convince ourselves and confuse ourselves that we can do it all over. And guys, there are a lot of things that are actually very dangerous and deadly. Now, I'm not going to talk about driving tonight other than that little part. So if you're convicted right now, then you're welcome. That was from the Lord, not from me. I'm just passing on the message. Now, here's what's fascinating. Scientific studies and tons of research have shown that there are only 2.5% of people that are actually able to multitask. Okay, think about this for a minute. 2.5% of people are actually able to multitask. How many of you think it's you? Raise your hand. Just be honest.
Maybe.
Okay, so 2 out of, we'll say, 20. I don't know if that ratio is the same. Now, here's the thing. All of us would probably say we multitask in some way. I mean, I can fold laundry now, but I may not drive. And well, definitely not after you said that. I'm not going to drive and listen to the radio or whatever. But the truth is, science and statistics show us only 2.5% can actually do it. Here's what really happens when we multitask. When we multitask, all we're doing is switching quickly between a bunch of different things. And a lot of times, it's not finishing one thing before we jump to the other to only come back to it eventually. So what's the danger? Well, there's three things. Number one, we don't devote as much focused attention to our task, activity, or the information in front of us. We do not devote as much focused attention to task, activity, and the information in front of us. Number two, we sacrifice the quality of our attention in those moments. And then third, we are far more likely to make mistakes. So, particularly, by the way, in complex situations like driving. So what's funny is if we were to follow behind you while you were driving and on the phone or texting, you may not realize it, but oftentimes we can tell because you're not paying attention. You think you're multitasking. I think I'm multitasking, but what's really happening is something is giving way because I can't actually do both at the same time. At least the research tells me that. So we've got a real problem here. Why is that? Well, because if we aren't giving the attention something deserves, especially if it's a major part of our life, if we're not able to focus on it, we're not giving it its right attention, and we're most likely going to make a mistake, if not now, eventually, then that's a real problem, right? It's funny, they say for a surgeon, they always say the gift of a surgeon is his or her hands. But really, the gift of a surgeon is not just their hands, though that's a part of it. The gift of the surgeon is the ability to monotask, the ability to isolate everything else and focus on the surgery. Do you want a surgeon that's listening to music, watching TV, and talking to someone while they're just messing away with your hand that you may or may not ever use again? I'm pretty sure I want the surgeon that could care less about everything else in the world and is laser locked in on that one assignment that they have to do. So, of course, surgeons are gifted. Let's not discredit that. But it's the ability to isolate onto one sole thing and to not miss a beat, because in surgery, if you miss one beat, it could all be over. This is very real, by the way. My stepmom, nothing to worry about, but she fell, messed up her wrist, and she's going into surgery tomorrow. And so when I was reading this, I was like, yes. I hope you got a monotasking surgeon. Good luck. I don't know how to find out if that's the one. Probably if they still have a job, it's a good sign. But that's the ability, right? It's the ability to zero in. So let's look at some science here. So we're talking about multitasking. We're linking this into our lives. Let's talk about some science. Poor focused attention and lack of quality in thought is the opposite of our brain's design. Okay, let me say it again. Poor attention and lack of quality in our thought, it is the opposite of our brain's design. Every rapid, incomplete, and poor quality shift creates a, what they're going to call, a milkshake in our brain. And that milkshake of our brain cells and our neurochemicals happens inside of our brain. So whenever you and I are multitasking, when we're not giving the attention it needs to be, when we've got a bunch of things that are pouring in on us, our brains are going crazy inside. They're having what she describes as a milkshake multitasking moment, because all of these things in our brain are happening and we're not operating at full speed. We're not operating at 100%. We're not able to focus in and narrow in. Now, here's what's interesting. For young Americans, for those of you that have kids, this has gone up 120% in the last 10 years. And I don't think any of us would be surprised by that. Maybe didn't know the number, but we hear it and we go, I'm not surprised at all. Why? Here's what happens, particularly amongst boys, by the way. They grow up doing two things, playing video games and maybe watching TV, playing computer games, yet they're watching TV in the background, or they're listening to music, or they're doing this, or they're doing, so they are ingraining them. So by the way, the average kid spends 8 to 8.5 hours on some kind of an electronic device. So if for, let's just say half of that time, for 4 hours, a teenager is doing two tasks at once, what is their brain doing? Their brain's going crazy. And here's the thing. What we do to our brain, as we've been learning, has lasting effects. And so for these kids, they don't fully experience the repercussions of this till they get a little bit older. And guess what? The signs that come from that is depression and anxiety. And it is the thing that's plaguing our young people today. And so because their brain is constantly having this milkshake experience, it doesn't know how to respond. So then they get older, just a little bit older, by the way, and all of a sudden depression and anxiety have increased. We're going to talk about social media in just a minute. These things are deadly. And if the average kid is spending even close to 8 hours doing this to their brain, we're in trouble, right? Here's one of the worst parts. When this happens, what they do then is they label it something. ADD and ADHD, and the response to that is medication. So, now hear me carefully. I'm no place to say right or wrong on medication, but whenever we see that something either could have been avoided or is, quote unquote, from the book, misdiagnosed as ADD or ADHD, man, we have a problem. We have a generation of people growing up on medication when really it's because we did it to ourselves, or parents allowed them to do it to themselves. Now, let's be real for just a moment. Technology isn't going anywhere, right? And so we can't walk out and be like, that's it. Give it all to me. TV, iPad, give me your car. Give me everything you got. It's coming with me. If it can be turned on, it's not happening. Be careful here. Technology is not going to go anywhere. What we have to do is to learn how to use it safely, to teach how to use it safely. And for many of us, whether we're parents of kids or just dealing with our own life, we don't know how to use it safely.
So we've got to learn that first. And understanding some of these few things I just shared with you can be really helpful in getting a better grip. Because the truth is, TV can be very relaxing. But we also learned last week, sitting on a couch for 8 hours watching TV isn't really going to help you do anything. In fact, it's going to make you feel worse. Playing video games, all right, I bite my tongue as I say this, but it can be helpful for kids, it can be fun for them to relax and enjoy a little bit of that. But if you don't control the time, guess what? It's messing with their heads. And just like you and most of you in this room, you're probably not just only playing the video game or only folding the laundry. You're probably doing something else in the background, and you can guarantee your kids are the same way. And so this milkshake is taking place in their brain, and it is leading to depression and anxiety, which is often being misdiagnosed as ADD and ADHD, which is opening up the medication overload that is plaguing the young people today. It also, just on a side note, makes all of us, when this happens, less likely to actually be able to focus on one thing later on. See, we're rewiring our brain by going through the milkshake process, so then when we actually do turn everything else off and try to focus on one thing, we still can't do it. This is why some of our kids try to study and they can't get their mind around it, because they've been milkshaking their brain for years. Very, very real thing, right? Now, some of us are going, well, what about my kid? My kid is 16, 17, 18. It may be too late. It's never too late. Remember, this is what the whole point of the book is. Everything is fixable, but it will take work and it will take time. But we got to first understand it. So praise the Lord for the information. Now, let's talk about social media. Woo! How many of you are on the socials? Raise your hand. Any way, shape, or form. Great. How many of you know someone on the socials somehow? Okay, this is good information for you. But if you're not on social, good for you. Social media has a strategy. Anybody know what the strategy is? It is to push more information before you finish the current information. That is the simple strategy of social media. Of course, they would never admit it, but you can see it just by being on a few minutes. If you get on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever other new thing comes up, TikTok, fill in the blank, you will be able to scroll forever. Ever. You think I'm kidding? Try it carefully. Set a timer, all right? You will scroll forever. That is the model. Before your brain can even process what you're looking at, it has already decided what's coming next. This is the social media way, right? In their opinion, it's just advertisement. It's just keeping the things you like in front of you, but what it really is a bombardment on our brains. It's a bombardment on our actions. We're going to talk about this in just a second. It is a total bombardment. But they don't care about you as much as they care about making money. So you need to understand that. When you and I engage in social media, hear me again, let's pause for just a moment. Let me step aside and say, I'm not anti-social media. I don't think it's terrible. I just think, again, when it's not used rightly and it's not understood, it can be so dangerous. So let's re-engage in this. Okay, so we're using social media. We're doing all these things. Well, what happens? Okay, so here's the thing. There's a real dilemma that's coming up, and it's the difference between the question, are you a social enthusiast or are you a social addict? Are you a social enthusiast or are you a social addict? Let me give you an unwritten down response to that. Here's how you know. Can you close your accounts right now and be okay? Now, of course, all of us are going to be like, of course, no problem. Do it right now. Well, my phone's battery about to die. I'll get back to you on that one, right? Are you an enthusiast or are you an addict? Okay, let's look at this. This is really important. So, in fact, this is interesting. In Norway, it doesn't help us as much, but in Norway, they created what they call the Bergen Facebook Addiction Scale, because they needed a way to be able to gauge, are people addicted or are they just really, they're just really passionate about their home team, the Texans, says no one ever recently. What is it? Is it enthusiasm or is it addiction? So what happens is research is showing us, and listen carefully, research shows us, I didn't just point at you, but now I'm going to point at you. Research shows that multitasking social media is as addicting as drugs or alcohol. Okay, now wait a minute. Okay, now I know if you're not on social media, it'll be hard for you to process. But if you are on social media, most of you tonight will go home, you'll start watching TV, and what are you going to do? You're going to pull out your phone. And by the way, let me just tell you something. When you pull out your phone while you're watching TV, there's a really good chance whatever you were looking on here was not near as exciting as the show that was on TV, but you were just distracted. That was free. All right. She didn't even say that. I'm adding that for you. And here's why. Here's why I can say that to you, because, and I'm totally, it is all love, and I'm not messing on my wife. We're going to really talk about this. But that's what she does. She cannot watch a show without doing this. And I'm looking at her, and I'm going, I know you think you're paying attention, but it's not possible. It's not possible to be locked in to every character and every move. And did you see that fly across the screen? Oh, yeah, sure. No, you didn't. Because your eyes are right here. But here's the thing. I get on her, but you know what? I do the same thing. I pull out my phone, and I'm like, oh, I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I want to. You know why? Because what's happening inside, when we multitask, particularly with social media, it gives you the feeling as if you were on drugs. Try it tonight. Carefully. Just try it. Try to do something else while you're social. And what you're going to find is, oh, it feels good. I want to keep looking. I'm like, oh, I need to check this. And I need to check that. Oh, that's so cute. That, and I want to check this. And I want to check that. The feeling inside is equivalent to an addiction or a high. Or let's just say a high. That's hard to fight, guys. Especially when you didn't know that. I thought that I was just having a great night. I'm just having a good night. This is so much fun. The TV's on. And I'll scroll. No, you're an addict. You're a druggie. Congratulations. Welcome to social media. I noticed less people showed up tonight. How convenient. How convenient. Do you see the difference? You see how easy these things are when we don't understand them, then they just slip in. Here's another thing that happens when we're talking about this social media. The more social circle, so the more, we'll just say social media platforms you're involved in, so the more things you're keeping up with and following, the more likely it is a source of stress. That's just scientific. But here's what happens. That could be a whole thing, but we know that. Now check this out. Let's talk about it with consumerism. With consumerism. What happens is it interferes with our clear thinking and our decision making, which leads to and lowers our, it doesn't lead to, it lowers our self-control. So our self-control in what, Chad? You may be thinking, let me tell you. It leads to rash, impulsive buying. You ever bought something while you were on social media?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to test it? Just tell your phone. Just say, let's see, North Face jacket. I guarantee you tonight, somehow North Face jacket will come across my social medias. That's how serious it is. Unless you turn off the microphone when you sign up for Facebook. What happens is, because we're in this zone, our self-control is lowering, and all of a sudden we're more likely to rash buy or impulse, to lead to rash decisions and impulse buying. They know that. That's why every time you're going through a feed, what do you see? You see things they're trying to sell you while you're also looking at other people's stuff, right? You're not looking at your stuff. You're looking at other people's stuff, and then you're getting depressed because you're looking at what everyone else in the world has that you don't have when it's really not true. But it goes on. It also leads to poor eating decisions. This is all by research. I'm not just listing random stuff. Research says that this leads, social media multitasking leads to poor decision making in purchasing and poor eating decisions. Most people that have a high rate of social media uses also have a high rate of BMI and tend to binge eat. Not all, but most. In addition, it leads to, just for fun, lower credit score and a higher credit card debt ratio. So if I were to tell you, hey, every night when you go home, you should totally engage in something that's going to cause you to probably buy something you really don't need, cause you to gain some weight, and probably hurt your credit score, but you have fun with that. Anybody signing up when I pitch it like that? No, because listen, guys, this is how the enemy works. He never pitches you something that doesn't look good. What's the point? He's not going to tell you, hey, that stove burner looks amazing. Why don't you go put your hand right on there while it's on and see how that feels, right? We're not going to do that. But he'll lay something in front of you and say, oh, hey, look at that old flame you had back in high school. Look how great he or she's doing now. Oh, but wait, they're single. And of course, in that moment, you don't think about all the bad things that led to y'all never talking again. You think about the two or three good moments that you had. Oh, I remember that time we were on the Eiffel Tower. I guess we had that romantic stroll. He also was a complete jerk on the way down. That's why we broke up. But I don't remember that. I'm just thinking about the top of the mountain. Why? Because our brains have been jacked with while we've been messing with social media. That's just one of the many examples we could use. This milkshake that's taking place. And this is just social media. So now let's back up. Let's go back to the multitasking, okay? So regardless if it's through social media or if it's us just trying to do a bunch of different things, the point is you and I have now become less effective for the kingdom of God when we multitask. You and I are less effective for the kingdom of God when we multitask. Now, multitasking decreases our attention and makes us less able to focus on our thought life, which opens to a couple things: a shallowness in who you and I are, and it weakens our judgments and our decisions. So we're not just talking about social media. This is now about life. When we're multitasking, it decreases our attention and makes us less able to focus on our thought life, which we spent a few weeks talking about how important capturing our thoughts are, right? And Scripture confirms that. It makes us to become more shallow. It weakens our judgments and our decisions, and we become almost passively mindless. Why? Because you and I think we're handling a bunch of things, but we're really not. We're just confusing ourselves. Instead, we need to lean into deep intellectual thinking that will protect us from shallowness. On a scientific level, when we think deeply, it activates our prefrontal cortex, so right here in front of the eyes, which decreases emotional volatility. Have you ever noticed when you're on, for instance, social media, how quickly your emotions can shift? Have you ever noticed that? It happens pretty quickly. It really can happen fast. But it's not just that. You ever notice while you're doing something and someone distracts you and you could, if you're not careful, lose your mind? She's like, I'm trying to do this. Why are you bothering me right now? That's me, by the way. My office knows me as the guy, hey, his head's down, leave him alone. Leave him alone, because if you come distract him, see, I understand I'm not a multitasker. So I tell particularly Vanessa, who's our admin person, I just say, listen, if I am locked in, leave me alone. Save your question, I'll come back. Not because I want to be rude, but because I know that I'm more volatile when they interrupt something that I'm seriously working on. Because I know that I can't handle a bunch of things at one time. I have come to this conclusion a long time. I'm just getting science to back it up. It makes me so excited. That's a side note. But they know, man, listen, he's never trying to be rude, but he's more likely to kind of be a little short or a little snippy when he's locked in on something because he's trying to get this done. So we've created a system where they understand unless it's something that just has to be dealt with, they just put it on the back burner, let him get whatever he's working on done. Then I come out and I say, okay, what's up? What do we need to talk about? What do we need to do? Now, this, unfortunately, is a great system that's taken a lot of pain to get through. And I know it may be surprising because I just seem like the nicest guy you've ever met in your life, but I can actually be a real jerk. And it happens a lot in my office because I get very passionate about the work that I'm doing, particularly when it's our church and what we're doing here. But sometimes I just can't let those things overlap. You see that? So our emotional volatility is at risk when we don't do this. So when we deep think, we help to control that. And things in our brain, including our prefrontal cortex, are taking place. Now, let me show you this, because you've probably heard this myth that I heard about, which is partly why I almost didn't want to teach you guys this tonight, because I wanted to make sure I understood it. I have always heard that men are not designed to multitask, but women are. How many of you have heard that before? Right? I've even, hate to say it, taught that before. I did a message called The Tale of Two Brains, and I talked about men and women, and I used all this research that someone had found. Well, here's what I discovered, okay? Sometimes it's okay to be wrong. But more importantly, here's what I found. It wasn't that exactly that I was wrong, but the extent of what that research was saying, I took way too far. See, here's the deal. In our brain, male or female, science has confirmed neither one of the genders can do it better. Women have just been called to do it more. Now that's interesting. Unless you're a guy, that's usually the one responsible for calling the women to do it more. Why? Moms are nowadays, most of them are working a job while also still taking care of the house. They are still in a ratio right now. It's still 40, I think it's 48% of women still do all the household chores, even in a nuclear home, even if they're working a full-time job. So we have assumed that women can handle because women have been more willing to do it. But the truth is, science is showing us that no male or female linked up against each other, neither one is better at multitasking. We've all been designed not to do it. But what happens? Well, here's what's interesting. Men, because of the extra amount of testosterone that exists in men, we are more inclined to focus on one thing. And do you know what it comes from? It comes from the competitive nature that comes from the testosterone that's in men. Interesting. Now, see, this is what the research in my message previously was telling me, that men were more likely to zero on one thing and women were more likely to zero on multiple things. What I shared was right. The problem was the brain didn't confirm that. That's just how we've made it be for women. Now, men, what's happened is we expect the man to be the leader of the home. So men, you lock your eyes on one thing, and that is to take care, to protect, to provide for your family. It's to be the leader of your family. That's your job. And God gave you some extra testosterone to make sure you nail that job because it's kind of important. But ladies, you've been asked to juggle everything. And science will tell you that your brain does not give you the ability to multitask. But what happens is inside of you with the oxytocin and all the other things that are flowing in you, God has created you to be more of the nurturer. And because you are the nurturer, you are by default more willing to step into the sentimental things, which typically involves the children. You're the one that wants to teach. You're the one that wants to love. You're the one that wants to help. God's created you to be the helper. And so though the brain, scientifically we're learning, no brain, male or female, can actually multitask better, God has wired the male and the female differently to be able to respond to different jobs within the home. But gentlemen, I'm going to go to bat for the ladies here and say, we've got to stop assuming that they're supposed to be able to multitask because they actually really can't. Now, there are some people that are better at handling multiple tasks rapid fire than others. There's no doubt about that. But don't be fooled. Only 2.5% can actually multitask. We're living in a fairy tale if we think by multitasking we are doing something right. Sometimes it's a necessity. There's times here at this church, in my job as a pastor, that, man, rapid fire, knocking things out is just what's going to have to happen. It doesn't mean it's the best thing, but it doesn't mean I get to kick it to the curb. What I have to learn, what you have to learn, is within the confines of where we live, where we work, what we do, we've got to learn how to plan better, organize better, manage our time better, rest better, capture our thoughts better. And when we begin to do these things, we can handle the tasks that have been put in front of us. But just make it simple. If you think you can do this and this at the same time, something is suffering. And so the simple term is, let's be careful we don't confuse ourselves or fool ourselves to thinking we're handling it, because one day it'll be a major decision. Or one day it'll be a little slip up that didn't seem major at the time, but it ended up ruining something major down the road. God says, I want all of your attention. I want all of your focus on me. We don't need to be better multitaskers. We need to be better monotaskers. We need to be able, and we practice through zeroing our lives on the Lord. God, whatever you'd have me to do, because here's the thing. God didn't send us out here and go, okay, I'm going to deal with these areas of your life, but the rest of them, you're on your own. I hope this class has been showing you that. All these things about science, the brain and the body, God said, I've been intertwining all of this for you. So just understand it so that you can get out there and work for the kingdom and do everything that you're in your power to fulfill the destiny that I have laid on your life, the purpose and the call that I have placed in you that was signified the moment you accepted me as your Lord and Savior. Go out there and do it. But know that I haven't left you over here. I am walking in this with you. But understand that it starts with putting our eyes on the Lord. And when we do this, Matthew 6:33 says, all other things will be brought forward to our attention. Because here's the deal. If you're going to multitask with the Lord, you're going to end up making a lot of wrong decisions. Because God's going to be there, but so will this and that and this. And when you start trying to weigh it out, or you get distracted even just for a moment, we let God slip off to the side and we start doing things in our own power. And by the way, we practice some multitasking with God when we come to church. A lot of us come to church on Sunday and we operate one way, and then we go home and we operate differently. We've seen God as something we come and experience here, but not something that lives within us, not someone that lives within us everywhere else that we go. He must be the center of everything we do. We don't need to be better multitaskers. We need to be better monotaskers. Proverbs 16:13 says this, "Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established." And I think this is kind of cool, just to give you something to think about. Every week we've identified some science, but we've really tried to look at, okay, God, what would you say to us through this? What do you want us to do? Isn't it cool that every time God's asked us to do something, we'll say on a spiritual level, there's been a mental and a physical benefit that came with it. God said, hey, I want you to spend time with me. And then we looked last week and the week before about all the things that happen in our brain and in our body when we do that. Isn't it amazing that God says, I'm not going to reward you with the BMW, but I'm going to take care of you, including your body and the physical, if you will put your focus on me in the spiritual. This is our God, our designer, our creator that knew every single detail of us. Now, one last little quick note I want to make. I want to show you something. Not only does multitasking lead to less focus. See how I'm multitasking right now? And it's not even working right now. It's not even going well. There's a reason, I promise. Not only does multitasking lead to less efficiency, lack of focus, and more mistakes, it can also be the difference in experiencing or not experiencing the God-given gift of human interaction. Now, we can fill in a bunch of different examples, right? Husband and wife at a table. Might as well put a gap between the table. A mom with their kid. They're out at the park. But mom's on the phone. Hey, shoot. I mean, it's almost like, if you think about it, you think about a dog with a leash. Our leash is like the power cord. We're just stuck on the wall, right? We got to be charged up all the time. So be careful. God says, focus on me. Science says multitasking is a myth. Be careful with that. Don't allow yourself to think you're doing something well. Put your deep focus and attention to things so that you make the right decision and you can give it the right attention. But at the same time, remember that multitasking, one other thing it hurts, is you and I and our personal and our human connection level.